Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're seeing strikes all across the country, and good thing. Look, right now there are in excess of 100,000 workers either on strike or have authorized strike, because you know what? They're fed up. Enough already. And this is what I've been talking about for the longest time. You know, if you remember during the pandemic, we kept calling them essential workers and they were heroes and all of this stuff, heaped praise on them. Lots of platitudes, lots of pats on the back. But when it come to saying, hey, we'd like to support our family. We'd like a living wage. We'd like health care, maybe a little pension security. I don't know, maybe a little something. Well, that's a bridge too far. And I've been saying for the longest time, this is what we do with the people that we call heroes. Lots of platitudes, lots of, hey, thanks for being here, lots of applause. But when it comes to, following up, like we've done with our soldiers, like we did with the 9/11 responders, well, maybe not so much help. And here to share some thoughts on, well, what we do to our heroes, I've asked John Field to come talk with us. John is one of the 9/11 responders injured during the response, a kidney donor, and a champion for the heroes we so easily forget. He's also the founder, president, chairman, basically chief cook and bottle washer at the Feel Good Foundation. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at all of the stuff that's going on, all of these strikes, all of the activism that's going on, and I keep coming back to this moment of, you know, I remember calling them heroes. I remember calling them essential and everybody, praising them. But now that they want something, can't do that. Sorry. Something you understand.
Yeah. The beautiful thing is that it's our birth given right to strike. And that's when we force change. And kudos to anybody who goes out on a Saturday or stays after work and joins those who are striking. And that's the American way. That's democracy at work. And that's us forcing elected officials to do the right thing. You know, we're all guilty of calling essential workers. Remember when we were all saying they were frontline workers? Those doctors, those nurses, those people that were on the front lines. We're wrong. You know, I thought about this long and hard. They were our last line of defense. Right. The American people were the frontline workers, and we failed them. And we made their job that much harder, and we could have fixed this pandemic a long time ago. But then it spiraled out of control. And now you see all of these strikes and all of these labor issues because the pandemic shut down the machine, and it's hard to get the machine up and running again. And, just like 9/11, all of these men, firefighters, cops, construction workers, volunteers, they got sick, they lost their jobs, and they were hailed as heroes. But once you become a financial strain on the system, you get kicked to the curb really quick. Same thing with veterans when they come home from war and they lose a leg and an arm, and we put them on that pedestal for 2 or 3 weeks until the next story comes along.
Yep.
And we've helped now pass 13 pieces of legislation, and mostly because of blue-collar workers. And we're going to continue to fight for them. We're going to continue to advocate for anybody in labor. It was labor who helped us get the 9/11 bills passed in D.C. and in Albany and in New Jersey and in Michigan. So this is something that's dear to my heart.
No, and it's one of those things where, I keep asking the question. I've been doing this for years. Look, I grew up in the early 70s. I came awake in the early 70s at the end of Vietnam where I saw what we did to our soldiers. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. So what I saw of the military, I saw guys with broken minds, broken bodies, drug and alcohol problems, just dumped back into our housing project and no help whatsoever. And, that's one of those things that has stuck with me. And every time we send someone into harm's way, I say, if we're willing to send them, are we willing to take care of them on the other end? If we're willing to send people into a pile of destruction like you went into, are we willing to take care of them? And the answer invariably is always no, John.
No. But, Rick, that's the true cost of war is from the time that recruiter gets that kid at the mall right? And then they send them off to basic training and then AIT and then a duty station and then probably war. You know, the true cost of war is when they come home. And, you know, Americans are guilty of, and it's not malicious. There's no harm intended. But we're programmed to say thank you for your service. And it stops there. Thank you for your service. It should be thank you for your service. Thank you for your sacrifice. What can I do to help you? What can I do to alleviate the issues you're coming home with no arms, no legs, post-traumatic, burn pit, being, you know, cancers, respiratory illnesses because the federal government lied. You know, we need to do a better job. And, you know, we might not see it in our lifetime, Rick, but I believe change is coming. And this country's going through some difficult growing pains right now. And if everybody like you and others continue to chip away, we're going to make life easier for the next generation.
No, I sure hope so, because I keep asking this question. Every time something comes up, I go, if this is how we're going to treat this generation of heroes, who's going to be the next one to step up in the next moment of crisis, looking back and going, look what you did to those guys. I don't want to be that. So for me, this is not just, you know, being moral or being, you know, a decent person. This is looking towards the future and going, hey, we might need, quote unquote, heroes in the future. So we should probably take care of the ones we're calling heroes today.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, listen, I go back to, you know, my grandfather told me stories of how they were taken care of after World War II. This country repeats its mistakes. But I mean, look at a cop who was in a shootout and got shot. And, you know, a year later, the guy's losing his house and can't afford to put food on the table. You know, individually or on the large scale, we continue to fail these men and women. And it's not just veterans, and it's not just firefighters and cops, it's those in labor, those who got hurt on the job. We just need to do a bit, you know, we label each other too much. And I believe politics spreads its ugly wings into everyday society. And, you know, when you look at the top echelon of leadership, it's unions, it's Democrat. And then when you look at the membership, it's a lot of Republicans. And now you're seeing a lot of Republican states really basically kill off labor. And a lot, and I don't say this lightly. I really don't say this lightly, but you know, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. We just got to do a better job of treating each other.
No, you're absolutely right. And I say this, you know, about the pandemic, we've got to be respectful of each other. Because one of the things that an article I read with you in it, talking about COVID, I said, you know, you're afraid of nothing. But you said you were scared of COVID. Because, look, you're somebody who has some pre-existing conditions. And this is one of these moments where I go, you know, we need to be more respectful of each other. Look, I hate wearing masks as much as anybody. But the reality, if you and I are in the same room, out of respect for you, if not for myself, I'm going to be wearing the mask. Because I don't know if you have a problem. I don't know if you're immune suppressed or any of that stuff. I don't know where that level of respect disappeared. I'm still struggling to figure that out.
Yeah, you know, if I go back 20 years ago, we should have bottled September 12th. And I don't think wearing a mask would be an issue. But you're right. I wear a mask everywhere I go. I'm vaccinated. I already had it. I've donated plasma now 8 times. If you don't take, listen, I had COVID and pneumonia. It almost killed me. It scared the snot out of me. You know what? My sympathy level is not that high anymore for those who continue to question this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a conversation the other day in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and the person said, I'm still doing research on it. And I politely said, you know, about 4 or 5 billion people in the world now are vaccinated. How much more research do you have to do?
And what research are you doing? Give me a reading list of the research that you're doing. I want to see what YouTube channel. I want to see what Facebook posts you're reading as you're researching.
Well, I'm pretty sure he wasn't reading out of the New England Medical Journal, right? So, you know, it's hard to have a conversation, but at least I'm willing to have these conversations. That's another problem, Rick. Nobody wants to stop and have the difficult conversations anymore. You know, if your narrative doesn't fit my narrative, I hate you, I dismiss you, you go on with your life, I go on with mine, and I'm still going to be miserable. But if we stop and talk and listen to each other and try to understand where we're coming from, man, we might just take a step forward and keep going backwards.
Yeah, I often say, you know, the country went to hell when we stopped letting 5-year-old boys beat each other up in the schoolyard. because then you kind of learned how to deal with problems, and you kind of figured out that, you figured it out in the sandbox. We stopped doing that. And now we're, we got people who are 40, 50 years old who can't deal with that kind of,
when I first started going to Washington, D.C. in 2003 and 2004, there were log cabin Republicans and blue dog Democrats. And while they disagreed with each other, they had a conversation like we are right now. Now, I've seen Washington over the last 17, 18 years evolve into, there's no conversation. It's all argument, all theatrics. Go on, your favorite news channel and bash the other side. That is not leadership. The American people deserve better.
Yeah.
And my God, the American people need to hold their elected officials' feet to the fire. It's really simple. Once you change your mindset to they're not rock stars and they're civil servants, you will get something done. Listen, my IQ hovers around room temperature at best. But I've been able to help pass 13 pieces of legislation for a total of about $40 billion that's helped hundreds of thousands of people. Then anybody can do it.
And good on you. And let's talk about the work that you do. You're the founder, president, chairman, basically the chief cook and bottle washer there at the Feel Good Foundation. Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, Rick, when we first started, we were supposed to be a Band-Aid on a machine gun wound. Pay utilities, put food on the table. But I got asked to go to D.C. Somebody said I was good at what I did. I never had any training. And we've helped pass 5 bills in D.C., 5 in Albany, 2 in New Jersey, and 1 in Michigan now. But, we've also donated $9 million. I donated a kidney to a complete stranger. Listen, I didn't need 9/11 to know right from wrong. I needed 9/11 to show everybody how my mother raised me. And I think she'd be proud. She might hit me in the back of the head for cursing once in a while, but I think she'd be happy.
No, I put you in that hero category. One of those working class heroes who selflessly moves forward and helps others. And I know we throw that word around a lot and too easily, but I put you in that category because a lot of people would have just fallen back into the shadows.
Yeah, I was taught at an early, I was that 5-year-old kid in the sandbox. All right, so I had about 80 fights going through middle school and high school. I was a born fighter, but I'm also a pacifist. And I also believe you can get things done. Thinking that you're capable of violence and you'll fight anybody is sometimes just good enough to get something done.
Yeah. No, and look, the reason I bring this up, and I have a bunch of people going, oh, you want 5-year-olds to beat each other up? I go, no, I want 5-year-olds to beat each other up so they know that it hurts and that they know that this isn't always the way and that they figure out that, down the road, that we can have these conversations.
Well, you're not a weak man if you're full of humanity and you're full of empathy and you're full of caring and being generous. You're a weak man when you never had that fight, when you're a weak man when you never felt the pain. You gotta feel pain. Nobody's immune from getting pooped on in life. And right, I mean, we're all gonna go through something. Some of us are still going through something. And you're no lesser of that person if you give of yourself. Too many people have these false egos, and but inside, and I see it all the time on these when we're fighting for legislation. And John Stewart and I were on the Hill yesterday in D.C. and a lot of these people act with bravado, but yet they're scared and they're tiny little minute individuals and insignificant in life, but they use their titles as congressmen or senators to blow themselves up, and they put their pants on the same way me and you did, Rick, this morning.
No, I say, look, they're like you said, they're not rock stars. I call them tools. Everything that's going on in this society is not their fault. It's our fault. We're the ones who put them there. We can fix all of this by taking them out because they're simply tools. They're our representatives. This is still a constitutionally limited democratic republic with representatives, not kings and queens and knights. They're our people. And if they're not doing what we need them to do, we need to get them out. Now, here's the problem. We both know there's a ton of money into this that's promoting this kind of gridlock. Because as I said at the beginning, our 745 USDA certified billionaires, they walked away with $2.1 trillion during this pandemic. That's what's going on.
My dad in 1980, I'm going to age myself. I was 14 years old in 1980. And my father had a really good job. And he made $80,000 a year. But my dad had five kids. I'm the youngest. And he put kids through college, kept the roof up, and a nice house on Long Island. And now $80,000. You know, his boss probably made about $150,000. He was the CEO. The disparity now to back in 1980 is, you know, you're making $80,000 and the CEO is making $22 billion a year. There's a problem there.
Yep.
You know, during the pandemic, these people got richer and we got poorer. You know, not all people are dumb. Some people pay attention.
And like I said, you know, now, but going back to 1980, and we're about the same age. Going back to 1980, you had a union density of about 27, 28%. We're down to 6.4% now in the private sector, which is why I'm thrilled to see all of this strike activity and also people leaving jobs that are crummy going on. I think we're seeing a moment of a potential growth and boom in the labor movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to come back. I think it's going to be slower than we all anticipated. But again, we were a large machine that was shut down. And to get that thing back up and running again, it's going to take labor. More than any other profession, it's going to take labor. And I think by getting the infrastructure bill passed, and I think by doing other things in D.C. and at state capitals, labor will come back and the unions will be strong again.
That is my hope. So last question I've got for you. You know, you're seeing all this strike activity going on. You know, I'm hoping that this is a flashpoint that helps a massive expansion, but it comes down to legislation. Do you have any hope that we get this Build Back Better plan pushed through with people like Manchin and Sinema?
Yeah, I do. I really do. You know, Nancy Pelosi gave me an hour meeting yesterday. If we were in a crisis, the Speaker of the House would not have given John Field an hour meeting yesterday. So, yeah, I'm confident. I can gauge the temperature of Washington, D.C. And, you know, even Mitch McConnell, who I've had several meetings with, a lot of this is going to be a reflection. You know, they got to answer to their constituents, not only the American people. Yeah. And politics is personal back home. And I think at the end of the day, in the 11th hour, they're going to get a lot of this stuff done and ironed out.
I sure hope you're right, John. John, I appreciate the time. Really great talking, a great meeting. I appreciate you coming on, sharing some thoughts. Good stuff.
Humble, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John Field. Make sure you check out his website, feelgoodfoundation.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.